702. Weekend Breakfast with Refilwe Mpakanyane. Email her on refilwem@702.co.za.
It is 7:35. You're listening to the Sunday edition of Weekend Breakfast, and for the next few minutes, we're going to be dipping into our sustainability corner. And if you'll remember that Mauritian authorities have arrested the captain of a Japanese-owned ship that essentially got stuck off the island nation's coast. That then spewed tons of oil into pristine waters, particularly sensitive maritime area. And this is a Japanese shipping company called Nagashiki Shipping, which owns the bulk carrier, which is called the MV Wakashio. So having run aground on a reef in Mauritius and caused this large oil spill, we saw Mauritian authorities initially tracking the fact that the bulk carrier was in some distress and it started leaking that oil. There was initially a call to the French government to help with cleaning up the oil spill and trying to mitigate this disaster in some way. But it struck me that there was, for a very, very long time, besides the arrest of the captain of this ship, what struck me was that there was no call to initially, it seemed to, or that nothing was reported on the owners of this bulk carrier, and indeed even the Japanese government. So I wanted to find out how shipping companies are held to account, if they should, I guess, whenever there's an oil spill of this nature. And I say this in light of the fact that it's reported that this ship, this bulk carrier, had in fact strayed from its route and strayed from its shipping lane, and it was about 100 kilometres off route. So let's chat now to Annika Whelan, who is a commercial litigation expert with maritime law expertise at Annika Whelan Attorneys. Annika, thank you so much for your time this morning. I really appreciate you making the effort.
My pleasure.
Annika, please talk to me about this. What is the first port of call when something like this happens? Seemingly the captain of the ship might have been irresponsible in conducting his duties if he was off course and coming so close to a very sensitive maritime area, right? That reef that I've just mentioned. But yeah, from an ownership perspective and an insurance perspective, should the owner not have been the first port of call for the Mauritian government? How do these things work?
Yeah, so Rufil, there's a distinction between an oil pollution caused by a tanker, mm-hmm, which is a ship delivering oil for sale,
sure,
and pollution caused by a ship that spills its own oil for consumption.
Yes, yes, yes.
So in this case, it is a bulk carrier, so it's not oil pollution, it's not a tanker polluting.
Yes.
It's a bulk carrier, and the oil spill is, in the bigger scheme of things, actually a very small oil spill.
Mm-hmm.
But the consequences are enormous because of where the oil spill is.
Yeah.
So in cases like this, the owners or charterers of the vessel must immediately step up and take steps. And that's what the complaint about this situation is, that it's taken so long for anything to be done.
Yeah.
She deviated on the 21st of July. She ran aground on the 25th of July.
Sure.
So in those 4 days, we understand that Coast Guard was trying to get a hold of the captain,
mm-hmm,
to tell the captain that there's disaster looming, and they were unable to get hold of the bridge.
Yeah.
We understand that they only started removing the residual oil on the vessel early in August, I think 6 or 7 August.
So
one wonders what happened in those 10 days.
Exactly to the point, Annika, you say that they only started removing the residual oil about 10 days into this whole ordeal. You know, you're talking about the Mauritian government effectively stepping in, having not been able to get hold of the captain as well as his deputy.
Yeah. Well, after she ran aground, they were on the vessel. We don't know what the weather conditions were. Sometimes that makes it difficult for tugs to come alongside to take the oil off. But yeah, and COVID-19 also plays a role, no doubt. Travel is difficult. I'm sure in Mauritius borders are still closed. So in normal circumstances, a team of experts would immediately be on a flight out to Mauritius to be on site and assess the situation.
So, I mean, the reason I think this is particularly worrying is Mauritius has always been an example of a country, an African country, that is essentially exemplary in its conduct, whether it comes to economic matters and being able to essentially sort of stand head and shoulders above the rest of its peers as a tourism as well as a commercial destination or a business destination, and so. When something like this happens and effectively jeopardizes a large part of how this island nation is able to operate and to operate as a country and function, it's incredibly worrying. What recourse does an island nation, an island state like Mauritius, then have? And against whom?
Yes, so in this case, because it's a bulk carrier that's spilling its own oil, the owners and its insurers are liable for the cost of the cleanup and any other economic loss. So the first port of call is the Japan Protection Indemnity, who is the insurance for the owners of the vessel. But there is a limitation. All these international conventions have rights for owners to limit their liability. So there's an upper a limit for the amount due, in which case there'll be further layers of insurance that must be accessed.
And, you know, if you could just, perhaps you could specify what those upper limitations might be. One, I'm already anticipating that they perhaps might not be enough for a hill country, and the fact that there's the rehabilitation of this rather sensitive coral reef that has been affected as well. So we are talking about the impact, the future impact, current and future impact on this country's ability to essentially create to be economically healthy and functional. But what are those upper limitations that we're dealing with? And can you speak to how long it takes, for instance, for an oil spill of this nature to be cleaned up? What are the timelines we look at?
Yes, I think it's I'm not an environmentalist, but it's going to take many years for the coast to be recovered. As for the upper limitations, it's a calculation. They have a special currency called SDR, special drawing rights, and it's a calculation in relative to the vessel's tonnage. This is a bulk carrier. It's a very large vessel. She's about 300 meters long and 50 meters wide. Her tonnage would be somewhere over 200,000 tons, and it's a simple calculation. Last time I looked, it was 166,000 special drawing rights times 200,000 tons, and I think you come into an amount of $60 million US dollars.
Carry on, Annika.
The Japan P&I Club is also one of the, what we call the international group clubs. So any excess goes into a further level of insurance. But what's at play here is the creditors would like to submit as large claims as possible, and the owners would like to limit those claims to the lowest amount.
Absolutely.
So this is the that's going to be out of play now.
So if we were, as South Africa, to find ourselves in an incident, involved in an incident around this nature, of this nature rather, which bodies oversees matters such as these for us?
Because if this was an oil pollution spill, there would have been the International Oil Pollution Compensation Fund would come to our assistance. This is now the International Maritime Organization. And I believe they stepped up in Mauritius as well.
So we see
this is a big wake-up call for us for Freeway to make sure that our contingency plans are up to date and in place. We sit on a marine traffic highway, as Mauritius does, And we must make sure that we're ready for it.
Yeah. I mean, you call this a big wake-up call. Is there a sense in the industry that we might be asleep at the wheel or a bit lax around paying attention to these matters?
Well, I think it's just an ongoing audit that must be undertaken.
Yeah.
And we must be sure that we're not caught napping.
Yeah. So to that end, then, what is the rate of conviction in such matters? We've seen that the captain has been arrested, but you know, really, is it a matter of serving time in prison? Is it a matter of the company being fined? What happens?
Yeah. So we don't know the exact circumstances.
Sure.
We know in the Costa Concordia. The captain that had his girlfriend on the bridge, if I remember correctly.
Sure.
When they ran
a horrific accident.
He ended up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what the criminal charges are. We don't know what the specific circumstances is yet. But just remember, arresting a captain doesn't necessarily mean he's guilty.
Yeah.
It's just a way of securing his presence in court.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see how this plays out.
Yeah, I mean, you've just referenced the Concordia ordeal a few years ago, and you know that was one that had us all riveted as the details of that accident came out. For an investigation of this nature, surely I'm sure it's country dependent, but how long do they generally take? You've mentioned the fact that you know we're dealing with a whole new set of circumstances. It is different terrain in during a COVID-19 pandemic hit world.
Yeah.
Well, what do you imagine? How long do you imagine it'll take for details to come out or a full investigation to happen?
Yeah, so I think the investigators are already speaking to the crew. They already have a good idea of what transpired. Bearing in mind that this is not only a oil spill disaster, but COVID-19 has caused a humanitarian crisis, complete disaster in the maritime industry, where crew were not able to come off the vessel at the end of their shifts.
Sure.
Let's say you have a 3 months on, 1 month off. After in COVID, you couldn't come off the vessel, so you just stayed on. So there are crew members that have been on vessels for over 3, 4, 5, 6 months,
yeah,
even longer.
Well, you're raising something very important, Annika. The fact that COVID-19 has also brought about, in terms of international water, a mental health pandemic of its own amongst crew members on these bulk carriers. As you said, they finish their job, they're not able to dock and go home and travel and see their families. Are they earning during this period, and what sort of support is being extended to them, if at all?
Yes, one would assume that they will be earning. I can't see that any responsible ship owner would not pay crew. But, I mean, it's a very difficult situation for all the parties involved. In South Africa, we have new regulations issued last week that now permits crew changes, but our international borders are still closed. So unless the crew can arrange a repatriation flight, which is enormously expensive, they are still stuck on the vessel.
Yeah.
Even though the laws allow a crew change, it's just practically almost impossible.
Sure. This is quite a complicated matter. I think you've also brought in another element to consider, which is exactly, you know, what was happening aboard that that bulk carrier, and indeed speaking to even the mental health of the people aboard it. But really appreciate your time and your insights, Annika. Really appreciate you spending time with us this
morning. Thank you, Sheila.
All right. That's Annika Whelan, commercial litigation expert with maritime law expertise at Annika Whelan Attorneys.